The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 7th of September, 2020. On the podcast today, John Clark, CEO of Gfinity, talks about the first races in their series of their new digital motorsport competition, the V10R League, which goes live on BT Sport 2 tonight at 7 p.m. Also, Kieran Mazaria, CEO of Cadence Minerals, provides an update on their operations from the Amapa iron ore project to their investment in the lithium market. Plus, Wendy Lawrence, Chief Executive Officer of Totally PLC, TLY's ticker there, discusses their trading update they released today. And as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see both these lists, top 10 visions of the lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk. You can check out our COVID-19 index as well. What's rising today? The highest riser there is Omega Diagnostics, up 13% to 60.5. And the biggest faller, actually, this is why Wendy came on, is Totally, which is down 11% to 17.5 pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Clark, CEO of Gfinity, G-F-I-N. John, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Pleased to be here.
Yeah, I was in Turkey last, so I did see the news because my sort of mobile sort of melted down. Don't take it in water. Even if it says waterproof, don't do it. And because a hairline crack in the screen will mess it up. But I did manage to catch the news. I thought, oh, it'd be nice to get back and talk about that, because you signed a big distribution agreement, very impressive, for this, you know, inaugural, well, you should launch this thing a few months back, this V10 sort of racing, esports racing league. And already it's getting a lot of interest, which must be very exciting. But before we get into that, of course, different parts of Gfinity, sort of three pillars right now. So for people not familiar, just summarise Gfinity if you could, John.
Yeah, no problem. So Gfinity is a modern esports company, and we're focused on three areas: our digital media group, joint ventures with leading organisations such as Abu Dhabi Motorsport Management, which we'll talk about in a second, and thirdly, about building and growing communities of gamers for others.
Yeah. And like I said, you mentioned there the Abu Dhabi Motorsports Management. And like I said, a couple of months back, you announced a 5-year partnership with those guys. And tonight, 7 p.m., sees the first product you've created, the V10R League, going live on BT Sport 2. This is quite significant, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it's massive. And I think we look at it for significant for three reasons for us. Firstly, it shows that the world's largest broadcasters, you know, like ESPN and BT Sport and StarsPlay in the Middle East, they're prepared to pay for high quality competitive gaming entertainment programming, which is great news. I think secondly, it shows that for Gfinity, we're delivering on our JV and partnership strategic pillar. As you mentioned, we signed the deal with Abu Dhabi Motorsport Management in May, and we created the Global Racing Series, and the V10R League is the first product of that series. And it sort of means that as part of that model is that we get paid and Gfinity gets paid to design and deliver great products, and then we share 50-50 all commercial revenues. So it's a very important strategic move for us to go into this area. And you know, we're actually seeing the fruits of our labour very, very quickly. And then thirdly, it shows that just how good the Gfinity team is, in all honesty, of creating this product from scratch in under 4 months. You know, taking an innovative idea and then blending that with world-class execution. So I recommend people tune in tonight and watch on BT Sport 2 at 7 p.m, but also to visit BT Sport's free social channels tomorrow to watch sort of the show and the even more great content that we've provided for them.
Yeah, so of course, if you pay for BT, you can see it tonight, and then after that, you'll sit on their sort of YouTube and all kinds of social media channels.
Exactly.
For free, is that right? Okay, cool.
Exactly.
Yes, you signed this as the RNS last week, so very impressive. You signed distribution rights with BT Sport, ESPN, Stars Play Arabia, making V10, as you say in the RNS, R League, one of the most widely syndicated esports competitions, with broadcast coverage reaching up to 75 countries worldwide, potential audience of 150 million households. So is this in line with expectations for season one, John?
Well, what we knew due to lockdown was that broadcasters are increasingly open to high quality competitive gaming entertainment products, and so what we did, we created one with that in mind. We created this product, and it's made for broadcast. So that, when I say made for broadcast, that's new exciting formats. So things you can do in the virtual world that you can't do in the real, which is shorter races, relay races, putting things like jokers into it, sort of getting the the racers to do extra laps, etc. Never more than three or four laps, depending on the sort of the length of the track. So all of a sudden, bite size, snack size, racing that was as you don't normally see, and you don't see leagues, you don't see head to heads with races. And so we created that with these formats and in mind, and the needs of broadcasters. So it's brilliant that BT Sport, ESPN, Stars Play Arabia all chosen to invest in this product. They brought it unseen as well, which is again very very important point to make. And they bought it because they have trust in Gfinity's production team, because we've worked with them before to deliver consistently brilliant work, and that's why they were prepared to say yes, let's go forward with it. And based on everything that they've now seen, that trust was justified. So this is just the start, not the end for us. We expect season two and beyond to be in even more countries, and that's what we're now working on.
Yeah, it's worth highlighting. Like I said, at the end of the day, you need to make money from this, and like I said, you've got the financial details there, the contracts. You didn't disclose that, but multi-year, and you did say they'll play a key role in supporting Gfinity's target towards moving into profitability in Q1 of next year. But so they are, I mean, as some people have said, obviously they've probably got them for free, really, but are they significant? I mean, you can't say the figures, but are they a bit of money there?
We don't mention the figures there because that's commercially sensitive, not just from our side, but also from the broadcast themselves. But we've spoken to a lot of broadcasters, and there are some broadcasters that came to us and sort of said, we love the idea, we love the concept, we've got slots, but we don't want to pay for it. And we said, well, thank you very much for the conversation, but there's plenty of people that do. But they're prepared to pay for quality, and they're prepared to pay for innovation, and they're prepared to pay for formats that you wouldn't normally see that are delivered by great people. And we make great shows. In this instance, with great host Rachel Stringer, which we put in the RNS as well. Rachel's got a great background in traditional sports as well as esports, a committed motorsport fan, and that expertise just jumps out from the screen for you when she's on there. Nick Hamilton, from a very famous racing family, but Nick's an expert in sim racing. It's bringing that insight into the broadcast environment and the chemistry that he has with Rachel, and also with Ben Daly, who again is a YouTuber. And so we're reaching out to an even wider audience. One of the most popular YouTubers in sim racing in the world. And so if you put all that together and you create the great formats with great people, with world-class production from our team, with people like Amanda Lawson and Nick Westwood and Ben Chalk and a whole guys that have really cut their teeth in traditional sport and brought their expertise through to the world of simulation sport, and creating products that they know work for TV and for broadcast. So people that come and say to us, we love it and we want it for free, we'll say, okay, well, come back to us when you're prepared to put your hand in your pocket.
Yeah, exactly. So and also there's distribution rights to generate revenue from that. There's also brand sponsors for the competition. How is that going?
Yeah, in that space, our goal from day one has always been to get the distribution set up, and once you've got that, brands will follow. You know, we've had lots of conversations and continue to have lots of conversations with brands. They like the idea, they like the format, want to get into the space, but they invariably have the same question, which is, can you share with us how many people are going to watch it? Where's it going to be seen? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the goal is for us has been get the distribution sorted out, and then once you've got that, then you can get into more detailed conversations with the brand. So we're happy to be clean of brand sponsors in season one. We've got the distribution now, so we can prove the reach and show the engagement, and people can see the product and brands can see how they can work in it. And by doing this, this drives up the commercial value and the returns that we're able to generate. So since the distribution announcement on Thursday, we've seen a big spike in interest. And I think here's watch this space. It's the team's now working hard to get the right brands that want to invest and want to help this product grow and grow with it.
Yeah, I suppose that's like a catch 22, isn't it? You know, you go into one, so how many people are going to watch it? You don't know yet. So I suppose you're right to focus on distribution rights, because once you've got those big three platforms on board, you're guaranteed then at least a minimum amount of people, eyes on the screens, aren't you? Because they've got a huge, you know, platform there they can share the content with, I suppose.
Yeah, and again, it's a little bit similar to some of the conversation distribution side. Some brands would be saying, yeah, we'd like to do it, but because we haven't seen everything yet, then they would want to pay less. Our mentality from day one has been, we believe that we have a strong product here, that people will watch it and engage with it and enjoy it, and that has a value. And I'm prepared, and we're prepared to wait to get the full value for that product once people can see it. So, yeah, that's why the distribution is so important, and it's exciting time now. And getting it on screen, getting it on BT Sport, having people watch it, talk about it, enjoy it. I think this is a great next step for good, really positive brand conversations.
Yeah, well, fair play. I mean, like I said, the interest, for this, the V10 League, which didn't exist, let's be honest, three, 4 months ago, is amazing. Yeah. Distribution rights already with big platforms. And let's go back a bit further then. You know, Gfinity Digital Media Group, that didn't exist like 6 months ago. And pretty much, and it's been growing very quickly. You mentioned you had, I think, $7,000 a day in revenue the day. So, and it's ticking up slowly all the time. So is it continuing this strength? August, for example, was it as strong as July?
No, August again for us was a record month. So, you know, we've been focused on optimizing the sites that are part of the Gfinity Digital Media Group with GfinityEsports.com, RealSport.com and StealthOptional.com to make them optimized for video and for general programmatic advertising and rich media takeovers. So this meant for the, we were able to deliver revenue of more than $150,000 for the first time in August, which is goes to the point you're making. That was double what we delivered in June.
Wow.
So, you know, we're very focused and have been on Q4 and Q1 2021 to get to our to maximize the opportunities there. So we're on target to get to our 2 million revenue target from the Gfinity Digital Media Group in this financial year. The goal is to, you know, more of that spend that's going to be, we know there's a lot of advertising spend to happen in Q4, Q1 because of what I've mentioned before about new consoles coming out from Sony and from Nintendo, new games and peripherals that go with them.
Yeah.
So there's going to be more spend, and we're looking to get more of that spend to come into the Gfinity Digital Media Group. So, you know, it's been great to see brands like Samsung and Activision Blizzard choose our sites in August to invest in, not just once, but come back. So the Gfinity Digital Media Group is going from strength to strength.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? You talk about domain, authority, and I was quite impressed. Search results for you, and even if you type in Fortnite Chapter 2, which my son's obsessed with, I mean, your sites are ranking very highly, aren't they? I mean, there's new Forbes above you and on that sort of search, and Games Radar, which is a big site I know, was below you, and you got, 1, 2, 3 of your sites in above that, which is that's excellent, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. It's very, there's lots going on in this, and to people like in a team like Talal Moussa, who's the head of the group, and Dom Needler and a few other of the guys there that are doing. They're very smart, very driven, and have been creating sort of excellence when it comes to search engine optimization. But ultimately, you want to get those, and people are going to come back for a reason, and they're going to come back because of the quality of the articles, the quality of the video content that's created there, and the entertainment value that they're getting, and the knowledge that's being shared. So, you know, as we've mentioned before, you know, our focus for the digital media group was to build our reach, and it's great that we've now got 10 million users a month and growing. But what's even better is the fact that we now go from reach to deepening engagement. And so that's where the Gfinity Plus product comes in, and we're seeing people come back more, spend more time on the sites, spend time on the engaging through the commenting and forums that have been added. So the team is just consistently upgrading, upskilling, improving, finding which games are going to be the games that are really popping, making sure we're talking about those, but not just frivolously, but giving good insight, and that's what's working, and that's what's really driving the growth. It's keeping the gamer front and center, and making sure that the experience that the gamer is going to have by engaging with anything from Gfinity is of the highest quality. And I, you know, fundamentally believe that when you put the gamer and the consumer first, then good things follow.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you set out your stall there. You had these three pillars in which you're going to build on, and it's working, isn't it? It's going about. And so you must see the business now transforming. And so, I mean, even in this year, have you seen a lot of difference from the start to the second half? Or, I mean, will there be a big difference?
Yeah, when I took over as CEO at the end of February, start of March time, and took the immediate decision that we needed to sharpen our strategic focus and reduce our cost base. You know, it's that's the first thing that I really focused on. And this meant stopping certain activities that had the potential to be revenue generating, but were not really the type of business that's going to help us grow in the way I believe the business can develop and prosper. So, you know, making some of those decisions at that point meant that, and doing that at the time of COVID and, you know, the lockdown, you know, which impacted everyone, even our industry, which everyone sort of says benefited, impacted everyone in some way, because it meant that some brands and others were starting to scale back and weren't going to do as much, because, and people were on furlough that were going to be running campaigns and all sorts of things. So that was an uncertain period. But our focus was okay, well, let's double down in those three strategic areas of what we own, what we co-own, and what we build for others. So the decisions we took back in March are now helping us to deliver our target of putting the business on that pathway to break even by the end of Q1 in 2021. So August was as I mentioned, was a record month for the Gfinity Digital Media Group. And so we're confident about getting to our 2 million revenue target there. But as you mentioned earlier, you know, that didn't really exist in the way it does today, 6-7 months ago. You know, it was interesting. Talal sent me a note over the little weekend. It was a note I sent last July when we actually sort of got 1,000 revenue for the first time, and sort of said, "Mark this date. This, we've hit the 1,000 revenue, but this is going to be a sort of a watershed moment for the business and where we're going." And that's what the guys are doing great jobs on growing that side. You know, the fact that we're now live with our partnership with ADMM and the V10R League, you know, this is, as I mentioned before, is a model where we get paid for designing and delivering the products that we create, and we share 50-50 of all the commercial revenues and the combined team generates. So that didn't exist until sort of May this year, and so we're now starting to work on that, and we're seeing the benefits flow through. You know, great clients like Formula One, you know, in sort of April, May time of signing a multi-year agreement with them, and the esports program this year's kicks off in October in a few weeks' time. Mm. So the actions that we've taken I think, are giving us every chance to be successful. You know, nothing's guaranteed, but it's giving us a chance to be successful. So there's still a lot of work to be done. But I think what we're doing is starting to get what every business needs, and that's positive momentum.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, John, well, let's summarise that if you can. Three bullet points as to why someone, if they're not following you right now, why they should hit that follow button on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Oh, always happy to do this, please. Firstly, because we're a leader in a fast-growing, exciting sector. Secondly, we've got a sharp and strategic focus in three areas of what we own, what we co-own, and what we build for others, which is starting to deliver. And thirdly, we're driven to deliver on our target of moving to profitability in Q1 2021.
Excellent stuff. John, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Looking forward to it. Thank you for your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Kieran Mazaria, CEO of Cadence Minerals at KDNC. Kieran, thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you very much, Justin. It's good to hear your voice again.
Yeah, well, I've been away. It's been the summer. We were last spoke at the start of June, I think. So
yes,
a couple of months have gone by. Yeah. So before we get a summary, of operations, just for people not familiar with Cadence, or maybe they know a bit about Cadence, just tell them what Cadence is all about, if you could, Kieran.
Yes, absolutely. Cadence is an investment company listed on the AIM Stock Exchange with a ticker KDNC. We've invested in currently major investments in iron ore and lithium and rare earth minerals, mm-hmm. All of which are pretty important and pertinent to the current environment that we're in at the moment.
Yeah, okay, exactly. I mean, we're all heading towards that, electric economy rather than diesel and petrol. So, it's impending, it's getting closer. So over the summer, we've been busy. I see lots of news out there. Just give us a brief summary of operations and what's happened over the summer, if you could, Kieran.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we've had across our three major investments, things have really progressed very well in terms of their share price and two of the investments and the operational progress. So one of them is MacArthur Minerals. MacArthur Minerals, we've just owned over 2%. That in its share price has gone up from around 10, 15 cents to 55, 60 cents. So that's a massive increase in price. Mm-hmm. And that has been really driven by their progress that they're making at their assets in Australia, in which the infrastructure, they're tying down infrastructure, they're increasing resources, and they're really progressing that well. Alongside that, and as a result of the coronavirus slowdown, there's been an incredible stimulus into China. And that stimulus is, although it's meant to be more responsible than the last sort of capital intensive stimulus, they're going to be investing in their railways and other such infrastructure, which has driven up the price of iron ore, well, steel and therefore iron ore. And we can see that with now even sort of in June, the steel making plants were at about 87 to 88% capacity when they're usually in normal times around 75. So we're seeing really increases in iron ore from, beginning of the year 80 to 90 dollars a ton, now getting up to 130 to 140 dollars a ton for Platts index 62% iron. So yeah, That's been really good for the iron ore.
Yeah, absolutely. And then just generally, I know the economy is almost shut down for 3 months, but has that affected your investments?
No, not really. As I said, the iron ore pricing and that stimulus, because obviously China came out of coronavirus much before everyone, shut down much quicker, contained it. Therefore, they put that stimulus. So that whole, in the commodity sector, as you've seen with gold as well, that's more of a protection against, inflating currencies. But other commodities like copper and gold, copper and iron have increased in price as the demand for them in the biggest consumers of commodity, or the biggest consumer of industrial commodities, China, has increased as they've put their stimulus in place. So that hasn't affected us in that regard. It's been positive.
Yeah. Okay. And let's look upon the lithium side and the EV side. Your investment EMH, how's that going?
Yep, that's also done well. You know, it's improved in price. Again, I think it's around at the 20p mark. I think it was its lows were around 10. So it's improved in price. Again, you know, they're making progress. Again, you know, that has a that asset has a excellent JV partner with the who are effectively funding the whole bankable feasibility study. And there is an environment as well in Germany on a macro scale and Europe about effectively getting self-sustainable in EV. So they've got one of the largest hard rock lithium deposits in the world in the Czech Republic. And that's really important to secure supplies of lithium into the lithium ion batteries. And they're also and that stimulus in Europe to the drive to electric vehicles is really important in that asset and that project. And the asset is strategically located in the Czech Republic, very central to many battery manufacturers. And we're also starting to see there's an uptake in electric vehicles, although electric vehicle sales are down, for example, in the although car vehicle sales are down in the UK over this period, electric vehicles now represent 10% of sales. So we're going to start seeing this hockey stick, I believe, you know, which is probably 2 years more delayed than I originally thought. But, you know, you start seeing this hockey stick in lithium, and most forecasts are looking at shortfalls in 2022-23, which is basically about right when we talk about EMH's possible timeline to production.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and let's talk about your Amapa iron ore project. You know, a lot of people see this as a very exciting part of your portfolio there, and what's happening there at the moment?
Yeah, so absolutely, that is one of our most exciting because, of course, we have we're very much actively involved in the management mm-hmm. and operation of that. So we feel we have we're not just a shareholder, you know, a passive shareholder. Yeah. So that's progressed really well. I think, you know, although there has been. I think one of the things that we've always said, we need to get an agreement with the bank. We needed to, before we could really start operations. And, you know, finally, tail end of, last week, we agreed to the bank's terms. And, you know, that then, you know, we're going to go through documentation. And after that documentation is done, completed, you know, we can then, you know, move through to operations. In the interim basis, we've asked the banks the investors and the banks to file a petition into the court process, which will allow us to saying, look, while that document is being finalized, we're in agreement in principle, let us, you know, continue to our shipping process so we can start moving that material. Although, you know, it's disappointing that, you know, that whole process has taken longer. But ultimately, what we are doing is reaching a sensible transaction with the banks in terms of a settlement amount, which we'll disclose once we get to the final documentation. And that really then paves the way forward. And I know people may have been a bit frustrated with the time that it's taken to get to this, but you've got to understand that we're dealing with a syndicate of banks. One is a state bank off over two different cultures. And, you know, they've all got different driving what they want out of this settlement. So we've come to a point where everyone is satisfied and we can proceed from here. So, yeah, I see then the remainder of this year being really positive for Amapa. And really, we can get on with that. And in the interim, while that's been going on, we've been getting on with our scoping study, which to me is, you know, the results so far have been really positive.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Well, lots going on there. And now's your chance to summarise it in three bullet points. Three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page, then Kieran, and add Cadence Minerals to their watch list, please.
Absolutely. The first reason is Cadence is exposed to the Amapa project. This is an incredible, possibly an incredible value creation opportunity for Cadence. We're investing at a low valuation, and it's got a relatively low risk to get to production and relatively quick to get to production in terms of any sort of medium-sized iron ore project. So that's really important. Two, the other exposures we have are into lithium and rare earth minerals. We have investments in joint ventures and in public stock market where the rare earth minerals and lithium are very critical to the electrification of everything that we do, whether it be transport and or energy storage, etc. So that's, you know, exposed to that sector. Mm-hmm. And of course, lastly, you know, with the stimulus that we're seeing with the commodity stimulus we're seeing in China and around the world with the putting infrastructure in place, you know, the commodities that we're investing, particularly iron ore as well, we're seeing an increase, and we should hope that should continue and that remains strong while that investment continues going forward around the world.
Excellent stuff, Kieran. It's good to chat to you as always, and no doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Cheers. Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Wendy Lawrence, Chief Executive Officer of Totally PLC. TLC is the ticker there. Wendy, thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Thanks, Justin.
Now, you've released an AGM statement and a trading update today, a lot of information in there, and we'll dig into that in a bit. As always, though, Wendy, if someone's listening right now, brand new to the podcast, or maybe have vaguely heard of Totally, but not quite sure what you're about, can you just summarise the company, please, the business?
Yes, absolutely. Totally PLC, we are a partner to generally the NHS over England and wider in the UK, where we deliver shoulder-to-shoulder frontline healthcare services. The majority of our business is actually focused on the delivery of urgent care, but we also have a planned care division that provides and delivers outpatient services and physiotherapy, and our insourcing business, which works with the NHS to reduce waiting lists.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so you released this AGM statement and a trading update today, and I read through it. I thought, okay, it's all good, but the share price has come off. So first of all, go through, if you could summarise what was in that, and then we'll maybe discuss why the share price may have dropped off a little bit, so if you could. So take us through what's in there first, the trading update, if you could.
Okay, thanks, Justin. So, I mean, overall, the trading update was there to provide that information for investors about how we're doing. We believe that, you know, we continue to perform well. We did remove guidance from the market back in June, and that was around the fact that the way we do business has completely changed. You know, we're in the middle of managing a pandemic, but I'd like to reassure shareholders, and I think what the trading update was there to do is the fact that we remain really busy. Over 90% of our businesses is focused on urgent care, and we've been delivering those services with the NHS since the beginning of the pandemic. Feels a really long time now. And, you know, we believe we're in a really strong position to continue to do that. Business is going well. We are slightly ahead of our own internal management expectations of where we thought we would be. We've strengthened our position as a key partner to the NHS in terms of how we cope with the pandemic, and we continue to, you know, support them in every strand of work that goes through. Our other two divisions in planned care and insourcing, again, we covered in the update. The pandemic meant that those services were stopped during that time, and all elective work was cancelled by the NHS. But those divisions are coming back up to speed now. We are working in a number of areas across the country. Our insourcing companies restarted services over in Ireland back in June, and restarted services in England a couple of weeks ago. So they're gradually getting up to speed. Obviously, local lockdowns have impacts on those, but they're restarting. And urgent care has been busy from day one of the pandemic. So for us as an organisation, we think we're doing really well. Our cash position has improved during the period, and again, strategically positioned now to continue working with the NHS with whatever else happens as we look to the future.
Yeah, well, I was looking at that. On the 31st of March, when your results came out, you had 8.9 million in cash, and now you've got, the 31st of August, 10.2 million. So you're generating cash there. And so why do you think, let's be honest, every company in the world pretty much has removed guidance because the pandemic has been so unforeseen. And so the future is a little bit unsure in the next three, 6 months, maybe even 12 months. But so why do you think the market or certain people may have sold some stock here because the share price has gone down on this update?
Well, I think it's probably a misunderstanding around the way that the business works. And you're right, the majority of organisations have removed guidance. We are quite unique in a listed company in that we are a, you know, 100% healthcare provider. And what we have said in the past, and is probably worth reiterating now, is that our revenues are all secured via contracts with the NHS, with NHS Scotland, with commissioning bodies in Ireland, so that our revenues are secure. We're not seeing revenues decline. The difference for us has been that the way that we grew historically was via public sector tenders. Those tenders aren't coming out at the moment, and therefore we can't grow at the pace of when we issued guidance, you know, out to the market a couple of years ago. But our revenue base is secure. And recently we announced that we'd extended a number of our contracts in our urgent care division. I think that was around £7.5 million, if memory serves me right. And we'll continue to confirm when those extensions come through. So it's that bit of, whilst we're not seeing new tenders come out, the benefit of that is that the work that we're already secured via contracts remains and is being extended. So I think, you know, we need to reassure shareholders that our revenue base is not declining. It will increase slightly as we take on new pandemic-related, you know, models and services. But obviously, we're all working in that area of how long is this going to go on, and what do those services need to look like? But we're certainly not shrinking. So I think we need to provide that reassurance out.
Yeah, yeah. And what's the state of play now? Coming up to winter, there's been a lot of people saying that, you know, you'd have COVID-19 plus the flu, and generally, you know, more people get ill over the winter. How are you set up? How are you prepared for that?
Okay, so every year when you work in the business that we work in urgent care, predominantly, you put together your plans for how you're going to respond to winter. And you're right, the demand for healthcare services always increases. This year we've got added on the top the pandemic. So we have been for some time now, and we'll continue to work strategically with the NHS to make sure that the services we provide are ready to respond to, you know, what is really an unknown scenario. We don't know, do we? You know, we read in the press every day about what's happening with COVID-19. But our business is there. We are working with the NHS now to look at what worked particularly well during the height of the pandemic, making sure we embed those changes into services going forward. And we are aligned with them in terms of how do we best prepare for what is going to happen. You know, there's talk in the press at the moment about a review of how NHS 111 services performed. We're part of that review. There are changes planned, which I think will be announced over the next few months for the general public and how they access 111. But we're very much part of that, and that's going to be a positive for the business. And as I say, as soon as we know what that looks like, we will release it. But we are, as ever, prepared for winter and whatever it brings, and have strengthened our position, I think, with the NHS during the pandemic, because we've actually shown our resilience, we've shown our ability to actually deliver. So it will be busy. I'm pretty sure it will be busy. But again, it will be a positive impact, I believe, for our organisation.
Absolutely. Marvellous stuff. OK, Wendy, well, let's summarise. Three bullet points. If someone's liking the sound of this, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
And I think the three reasons remain as they always have been, Justin. We are unique in terms of our listing, and we have proven that we are a key partner to the NHS, and we all know that demand for healthcare services is rising. We always do what we say we're going to do. We over-deliver in terms of where we see ourselves going. And whilst lots and lots of businesses are struggling, Totally is growing. Our profits are stable, and we are in a very, very strong cash position with no debt.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Wendy, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin. Thank you very much.
OK, time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, it is Barron Oil, up 14%. At four, Cloud Cocoa Group, up 29% to 1.5 pence. At 3. Supply at Me Capital, down 2.14%, 0.685. At 2, Equatorial Palm, that's up 61% to 1.25. And at 1, it's Vela Technologies, up 62% to 0.11. Okay, it's time for the top 5 most liked RNSs. They are as follows. At 5, Totally, PLC, AGM statement and trading update. At 4, Two Shields, notification of major holdings. At 3, Open Orphan, HVV presents at 2020 ERS International Congress. At 2, it's Tech Capital, Guidant update. And at 1, Sylvania Platinum, I think it rhymes, annual financial report. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.